This is Glenn Dunn's medical editor with Australian Family Physician, and I'm speaking with Professor Graham Jones regarding his recent article titled Osteoarthritis, Where Are We for Pain and Therapy in 2013, which is in the November issue of Australian Family Physician. And thank you for agreeing to speak with me, Professor Jones.
It's a pleasure, Glenn.
First of all, how common is osteoarthritis and what is its impact on the Australian population?
Well, osteoarthritis is self-reported by about 10% of the Australian population. That's out of all men, women and children in Australia. It becomes more common with age, and by the age of 70 or 80, most people have some evidence of osteoarthritis. Its main impact is pain, but also that then interferes with function and mobility. So the impact in the population is both in terms of symptoms, but also in terms of costs. Mm-hmm. Latest cost estimates have it just under $10 billion.
Sorry, how much is that? You said
$10 billion.
$10 billion, yeah, right. So obviously a huge impact.
And that's going to go up because at present there's something like 50,000 joint replacements being done each year, but that's going to increase dramatically over the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm. And what is our current understanding of the pathophysiology of osteoarthritis?
Well, we used to assume it was a wear and tear process, that is, if you used a joint for too long or too hard or in the wrong way, you'd wear it out. But the evidence in the last 10 years has indicated that osteoarthritis is actually an umbrella term for a number of different processes leading to pain and cartilage loss in the knee.
Mm-hmm.
So the pathophysiology is actually quite varied. So within, for example, a knee joint, the common things associated with pain are bone marrow lesions, which are seen in the subchondral bone, cartilage defects, meniscal tears, and synovitis or effusion. So there's a number of things there, with different pathology,
mm-hmm.
Leading to the same clinical outcomes. And outside the knee, things like muscle strength and obesity also have an effect on pain and joint function, and central pain processes like anxiety or catastrophization can also have an effect on pain. So clearly you need to consider which pathophysiology is applying in the patient in front of you, because then you can get them the best treatment.
What about genetics? Do we have an understanding of the genetics behind osteoarthritis?
Yeah, the genetics is controversial. Most of the studies say that around half of the risk of osteoarthritis is genetic.
Mm.
But there have been a lot of studies aimed at trying to identify the genes associated with arthritis, and they haven't been successful.
Mm.
There's been very little good evidence in terms of replication. Where there has been evidence is there's been genes for pain,
mm-hmm.
That have been shown to discriminate people with painful arthritis from non-painful arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, these genes are to do with processing of pain, so afferent neuron function, rather than the joint itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And there's been a gene for obesity, for example, that is linked to osteoarthritis of the knee, but when you adjust for body weight, it disappears, indicating that gene is having its sole effect by leading to higher body weight.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what is the evidence for current standard therapies? For example, we often prescribe glucosamine and fish oil, paracetamol for almost all of our patients with osteoarthritis, but what sort of evidence do we have for these standard therapies?
Well, we've got good evidence for some of these therapies, and there are reviews on treatments that work. So out of the ones you mentioned, I believe all of them have evidence of efficacy apart from fish oil. We've done a trial of fish oil in Australia funded by NHMRC where it actually had no effect on pain or structure in osteoarthritis. In fact, canola oil, which is the comparator, was more effective than fish oil.
Right.
Which is somewhat surprising to us, but that's the way it goes.
What else of fish oil were they using in the study?
We're using the 10 grams per day, so therapeutic rheumatoid arthritis. Now, that isn't published yet, but it'll be published soon.
Right.
For glucosamine, it's controversial. I'll take the view that glucosamine sulfate is effective for pain and structure, but not glucosamine hydrochloride. But others would disagree with me there. Paracetamol is only modestly effective, and I don't believe it should be first-line treatment, because rates only has a weak effect, and there are studies linking it to GI bleeding and heart attack and stroke, indicating it's not as benign as we all thought. So I think it should be placed further down the therapeutic pathway. Rosehip is effective in meta-analyses. NSAIDs are effective in meta-analyses, but obviously they have their pros and cons as well. Physiotherapy actually has quite a big effect, particularly aerobic exercise. It has quite a large effect on pain, more than strengthening exercise or water-based exercise, but all are effective. And weight loss has a modest effect. It's actually somewhat similar to paracetamol, suggesting that if you've got very well-established disease, losing weight is not going to lead to dramatic changes. So preventing weight increase is probably more important than decreasing weight.
Right. With regards to steroid injections, what sort of recommendations
are you? Well, I tend to use them if there are signs of inflammation. So if the patient's got an effusion, they've got night pain or morning stiffness, then injections are often quite effective. Again, there's good meta-analysis showing that they're effective. In terms of frequency, I usually won't do them more than four times a year. There are a lot of people vary in that. So some people say two injections in a lifetime. I would say every couple of weeks is fine. But there are safety studies looking at four times a year over 2 years showing that that has no harmful effects on joint structure. That's the sort of dose I'm happy to know.
What do you see as potential future therapies for osteoarthritis?
Well, I think our understanding of the pathophysiology is going to allow us to develop a lot of different therapies. The ones that look most promising at present are bone-directed therapies, to see if we can turn off bone marrow lesions and improve pain and structural damage that way. And we've had some success with that already with zoledronic acid in a small proof-of-principle trial. But I'm aware of other trials happening using that as a target. I think stem cells, platelet-rich plasma and those things look very suspicious at present. I don't think they're looking promising as future therapies. But what we really need is something that targets cartilage and meniscus in terms of repair issues as well as bone. And obviously, if you're looking at fatty outside of the joint, or shrinking muscles is a good thing to do. In weak muscles, we're doing a trial of vitamin D, because we've shown that vitamin D is related to pain and cartilage loss. We've also got some suggestive evidence that cholesterol may play a role in knee arthritis, so we're just commencing a trial of atorvastatin that prevents cartilage loss. So clearly there's quite a few things happening. And hopefully the next 5 to 10 years we'll see the sort of progress we've seen in rheumatoid arthritis.
From my understanding, what you're saying is that for patients presenting with osteoarthritis, there's not one approach. The approach needs to be tailored according to what we're seeing clinically and on radiographic investigations.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, in a lot of cases, MRI gives you a lot more information. Now, I'm not saying MRI should be ordered by everybody on every knee, but it does help you to decide what is the key cause of the pain. Although on occasion you get people who have all four of the structural changes in the knee at the same time, and so that makes it hard.
Okay. And finally, what are some key points that you think doctors should keep in mind and take home regarding osteoarthritis?
I think the key point is that it's an active process. The treatments work better earlier in the disease than they do later. And that there's quite a lot of evidence for natural therapy being effective and pretty safe. And we should be thinking carefully about non-therapy interventions or non-drug interventions such as exercise programs or weight loss or using medication.
Great. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me, Professor Jones, and much appreciated for your time.
That's a pleasure, Glenn. Thanks.